You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
This is the Game of Geeks podcast, your one-stop shop for news and reviews for video, card, and tabletop games, with your hosts CJ, Rum, and Brandon.
That's right. Welcome, friends, to the Gamer Geeks Podcast. This is the Gamer Geeks Podcast, episode number 9, recorded January 29th, because I didn't update the thing from last week, 2017. I'm, of course, your host, CJ, and joining me this week once again is Delbert. Hello, Delbert. How are you tonight, sir?
Good, man. How's it going?
I am good. I'm surprisingly well, considering I did a CJ Eats Weird Things earlier and I survived the naked chicken chalupa from Taco Bell.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, putting chicken on the outside of everything is always a good thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't work well for KFC, so, you know. The things I do for Geek.io, if you want to check out that information, that video, go over to facebook.com/geek.io show. Raul is on his way home from PAX South, so he might hop in sometime in the near future. If not, he'll be back here next week. So, what have you been up to, man? How you been?
I'm all right. I've been fighting with some encoding issues, but once I got those figured out, everything's working out great.
Legit. So, yeah, tech issues. We don't have any idea what that's like here. Not at all.
No, never.
Our setup is flawless as far as anybody knows.
Of course. Who dares ask otherwise?
Right? Not at all, because it took me like almost a week to do S4 because of technical issues. So, been playing anything that we're not talking about tonight? Or are you interested? Got some awesome games that came out this week, dude. Did you pick up anything?
I wish. I've been broke all week. I've been
watching lot of guys.
Yeah, same, honestly. I've been watching like 3 people play Resident Evil.
Oh, so. God, yeah.
So good.
My favorite this week is Team 4 Star Gaming is doing Krillin Plays Resident Evil 7, and nice. It is just brilliant. Like, you could tell it's post encoded, but you could tell that sometimes a person forgets what happens in these places.
Yeah, right.
Because his Krillin voice breaks every so often.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
So yeah, that's been great, and I've seen a bunch of videos with VR in that, and God, that game's scary on its own, much less in VR.
Yeah, I can just imagine what it's like in VR.
I don't want to.
I'm I've good heard with it in VR really well though.
Yeah, like, yeah, they apparently did really good on translating it. Just I don't want to be on the receiving end of it.
It's like the killer VR app for the PSVR right now.
Good for them. They needed one. So, I mean,
yeah, no, really. Where is it? Get in there.
I mean, it was selling pretty well, just not super great. But with this, apparently, sales jumped up a lot for it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, after 4, 5, and 6, everybody got like burnt out on the whole shooter horror genre, and then that's what caused them to go in this new direction with 7, and it's paid out.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely definitely drops a lot of the shooter aspect of things, and you get back to what, like, 1 and 2 felt like, except 1 and 2 looking freaking gorgeous and horrifying at the same time. This is not your run-and-gun thing. This is where you have 5 bullets to last you 3 hours kind of thing again. I love it.
Sure. And if you aren't very good at management, then you're screwed.
Yep. You take the knife, and you hope that kills things. Spoiler alert, it typically doesn't.
It does if you're also painful and like beating your head against the wall.
Yeah. Also, spoiler alert, get the car.
Truth.
All I'm going to say, just get the car.
Truth.
All right. So before we head on into our news, we are going to go ahead and take a quick break from our sponsors, and we will be right back with the news. Stay tuned.
On to the news!
Yes, indeed, it is time for the news. And as I mentioned, we had a pretty big news week this week, surprisingly. Let's go ahead and start off with what I think the biggest news is. So Marvel games are pretty disappointing, right? I'm not wrong in insinuating that.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, it's been kind of a thing where Marvel games is kind of... And, I mean, admittedly, the new Spider-Man game coming out looks kind of good. But this week, Square Enix, of all people, not only that, the same people who make Tomb Raider and Deus Ex, which I will be talking about later in this episode, are making an Avengers game.
I heard that. It sounds really good.
Oh, my God.
Giving Square Enix access to the sheer size of Marvel.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a great concept.
Yeah, it's nothing else is known about it other than the Avengers. It's called the Avengers Project, tentatively. The Avengers Project is being designed for gamers worldwide and will be packed with all of the characters, environments, and iconic moments that have been thrilled longtime fans of the franchises. Reads a press release from Square Enix. Featuring a completely original story, it will introduce a universe gamers can play for years to come.
I'm also hoping that confirms the existence of Marvel characters in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah, that would be that wouldn't surprise me at all.
It wouldn't, but it's like having that confirmation on the team up.
Yeah,
early before Kingdom Hearts 3 is even like pushed any farther. I hope there's like an entire world.
Yeah, this is
or two.
Yeah, exactly. This is the stinger. No more information will be released the rest of this year. It would not surprise me if that's a that's some curtain thrown over the guy in the back and. It wouldn't surprise me if we get a little bit more at E3, but at that point, I think we're just going to get Kingdom Hearts stuff.
Yeah.
Which I'm still good with. Bring more Kingdom
Hearts. Oh, yeah. Any more Kingdom Hearts is always better.
Yes. That's another game I've been liking watching, games watching people play. Birth by Sleep is a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. one of the better ones, I think.
I've not played any of them. I'm holding off on getting this. I'm probably going to buy it anyway and just kind of hold off on playing any of them until 1 and 2 come out in March. And then
do
the chronological playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Trying to play through it all the way through.
Yeah. Because right now I don't want to play the one that leads into 3 but doesn't lead into 3 but still leads into 3 but may lead into 2 but doesn't lead into 1. So, I just want to pull up a spreadsheet and be like, all right, cool. I played this part of Birth by Sleep, then I play Kingdom Hearts 1, and then I play this part of it, yes.
You almost need a degree in Kingdom Hearts to understand what's going on.
Yes. And that's what Wikipedia is for.
Indeed.
Hello, Poodle Puncher in the Diamond Club chat. Right on schedule, BioWare released another cinematic trailer this week for Mass Andromeda Effect. Mass Effect Andromeda, where you get some more views of some of the squad mates, including my favorite person named ever in PB. Spelled P-E-E-B-E.
That's and awesome.
Drac the Restorer is my guess.
Of course.
Drac the Restorer. That is coming out March 21st. That's right around the freaking corner, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things in March, it makes me sad that Raul's not here. He actually got hands-on with the Switch at PAX South.
Ah.
So it makes me sad
jealous. That he's here.
But I want to give him a week to recuperate from this and probably get over the con crud. I'm going to PAX East, which is the week that the Switch comes out. So I sincerely hope I'm able to pre-order my Switch in the next couple of days so I can get that paid for and... get that here. I'm not bringing that to PAX with me. No. I'll put my 3DS and I'm going to be happy with it. Of course, EA Origins and EA Origin Access members get to play it ahead of launch. It looks just like more Andromeda goodness, more space Western stuff. I'm still not sold on this personally. I mean, it's very pretty, and I want it to be good, but I just don't see myself really going to grab it on day one.
Yeah, I think I probably will, just in principle of trying to be one of the first, you know, push of people putting it on YouTube, try and gain some followers that way, but, you know, I love Mass Effect enough that I will definitely pick it up at least on launch day.
That's right. I got burned.
At least within launch week.
I got burned on 3 bucks on day 1. So, like, between that and No Man's Sky, like, I'm kind of done buying games on day 1. I mean, I just picked up Final Fantasy 15 this last week after they patched it. So, I got burned big time. And, like...
No, true enough, I get... Yeah.
I don't normally get buyer's remorse, but when I feel so bad that I just want to give, like, I want to give somebody else $60 because I spent it on No Man's Sky. So, like I said, it's been a pretty big, pretty huge week on game releases this week. Of course, like we said, we have Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, which is fantastic to watch. Kingdom Hearts 2.8 Final Chapter Remix, whatever, came out, which is, again, it's not Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2. It is almost every other game in the Kingdom Hearts franchise. It's Dream Drop Distance, I think, Birth by Sleep.
And a couple of those are relegated to, like, movies, which is cool.
Yeah, exactly. That I like that a lot. Also on the PS4 this week, we've had Moto Racer released, Yakuza 0, which I've not seen it yet, surprisingly.
I want it so bad.
The game that I'm wanting so bad and have actually not been able to find it anywhere locally, Tales of Berseria.
Yeah, the Tales series is really hard to locate.
Yeah, I'm thinking about just getting that on Amazon because
the
big box stores around here and even the small stores just don't seem to have it. They only got one or two. And
the Tales series is a very niche series. So it's something that I think the only one that was like super big was... what was it, Fantasia, or the one a couple years ago?
Symphonia was huge.
Yeah, there you go, that one. It's hard to tell. It's some Ia name.
And before that, really, Tales of Destiny was the only big one that people knew. On Xbox One, we had pretty much only one major title, Resident Evil 7, and we had Toby the Secret Mine, Siegecraft Commander, Rise and Shine, and Dead Effect 2. For the PC, of course, once again, we had Biohazard, Resident Evil 7. We had Tales of Berseria also released on that. XPrint X, Memoranda, Urban Empire released this week. And on the Wii U, we had Shantae, Half Genie Hero, which looks a lot of fun. I watched Team 4 Stars also doing a Let's Play on that, and that looks a lot of fun. Tesla Punk. Which, I mean, yes. Exiles End and Twisted Fusion out for that. And on 3DS, some other pretty major, a fairly major release this week with Dragon Quest VIII being released this week.
Yeah, Dragon Quest is always huge.
And we have Atelier Shelley Plus released on the Vita this week, which, yay, fun. iOS had Supergirl Land being released.
Gridland.
Sure.
Gridland.
And, oh yeah, Gridland.
I mean, I would totally play Supergirl Land. That sounds amazing.
I mean, I did give you that copy of, what is it? Akiba Strip.
Yes. Such an amusing game, I gotta say. It's just...
And also, Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links was released this week, and I will review that here in the second part of the show as well. What kind of stuff you got for us on news?
So, this week, Obsidian actually announced a sequel to the award-winning, I don't know if it actually made any awards, but it was really good, the Pillars of Eternity, excuse me.
I'm not the only one who can't talk, yay!
Yeah, well, I never can. But yeah, they announced a sequel to it, which is fantastic.
That's cool. I haven't actually played that yet. I keep seeing it on sale, and I keep wanting to buy it. I just never really do.
Yeah, no, I've wanted to play it. It's been on my list for a while. I love the old Obsidian games. They were, you know, Baldur's Gate was one of my favorite type of, you know, games. But yeah, they...
You sold me on it right there, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, they're trying to crowdfund it right now. It looks like they're doing it on Fig.
Yeah, it's
which is kind of cool. I've never heard of Fig before.
It's the new crowdfunding for games only. Mm-hmm. So, or for video games only.
And it's kind of cool that you can actually possibly share some of the profits, which is kind of an interesting concept.
that's a major thing that that has over things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And plus, some of Kickstarter's regulations are kind of predatory. So some people, game designers were trying to get away from it.
Not to mention so many, you know, games have been, you know, defunct off of Kickstarter that it just has a really bad rap for video games. Unsung exactly. Story, I'm looking right at you.
Exactly. Or you get ones that are half like Mighty No. 9, even though I don't hate that game.
But yeah, apparently the choices you made in the original Pillars will possibly carry over. Obviously, it's really early in development, so they probably haven't worked out how to make that work out. But I'm sure it'll work similar to how choices in the original, like Neverwinter Nights and everything, you could transfer it over by simply like selecting what you had done.
Yeah.
Dragon Age did it most recently, I think, with Inquisition, where you could select your character. So it's kind of interesting that they're actually doing all of that again, which is pretty awesome. And apparently the world is also going to be a lot more reactive, with NPCs changing the quest they offer depending on when you approach them and what they're doing, which is kind of cool. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but it sounds interesting.
That's fun.
Yeah, and apparently it's going to take place on an island named Deadfire, which sounds fascinating. Edible. Yeah, right. And you're reprising your role as Watcher from the first game. So it's pretty cool. So it's definitely the same storyline, but it is going to be a separate standing game.
Well, that's cool.
And of all the shiny new stuff you'd expect from a brand new game, companions, spells, weapons, pretty much everything you can imagine is going to be brand new, which is fantastic. Knowing Obsidian, they're gonna blow this one out of the park too. Like,
oh yeah, Obsidian has a lot of good stuff going for it. So.
And no one thinks that they do. Like, it's one of those smaller companies that people are like, oh, they've been dead for 20 years. They're not going to exist.
Yeah, right.
but I'm looking forward to that. I'm definitely looking forward to that. I haven't played Pillars 1, but I'm definitely going to try and pick that up before 2 comes out, just so I can, you know, have that basis built so I can go ahead and move forward into a new game.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm gonna do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And moving off of that to something entirely different, the company that was built by Francis Coppola, most well-known for Apocalypse Now, is working with video game veterans to try and create Apocalypse Now, the video game.
Nice!
And I'm like, I love the idea. They can screw it up so many times, so many ways. But if they do half as good at depicting the horrors of war that Spec Ops The Line did, they're going to be in really good shape.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's be honest, like I still remember the ending for Spec Ops, and that still sits with me. It was one of my favorite games on my console a few years ago. But yeah, they're working directly with game developers to try and build something that's going to not only work with the cinematic storytelling of games, but also roll in role playing mechanics as you're playing the role of Captain Willard on his mission. And obviously, like, as you go forward, the choices will warp the story accordingly. So I'm really curious. I'm really excited. I'm definitely hoping they do a lot with Telltale, because I feel like Telltale and like Apocalypse Now would be like a match made in heaven.
Oh, most definitely. You just nailed it on the head right there, man.
Yeah, like I read that. I'm like, if they don't have someone from Telltale working on this, like, it's just not going to work. let's see. Oh, but the development team is led by game developer Montgomery Markland, lead producer on Torment and Wastelands 2. They also got Rob Outen, who served as the lead writer of Gears of War, Battlefield Fallout, or Far Cry, excuse me. Lawrence Liberty was executive producer. Yeah, well, they also have Lawrence Liberty, who was also executive producer on Fallout New Vegas. So they have a grand and incredibly high pedigree of workers on this. So, and even Josh Sawyer from Obsidian is also a special advisory capacity. So they have a lot of big names in there.
Yeah, that's not an indie developer. That's got some heft behind it.
Yeah, and from what it looks like, the Kickstarter goal is 900,000, and if it's reached, the plan is to have the game in early access by 2019 for the film's 40th anniversary, with a full release in 2020.
That's cool.
So it's still got a ways to go, but I feel like the 900,000 Kickstarter is going to be super easy to hit with that sheer amount of names on it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's currently at 135,000 and there's 25 days left. So if you're interested in seeing a game version of Apocalypse Now, definitely hit Kickstarter. Definitely recommend that.
Well, not Kickstarter, but...
Well, yeah, but it's, you know, it's actually on Kickstarter. So...
All right. So shall we move on into the Blizzard Corner?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. So this week, Ben Brode actually... Friday, Ben Brode, lead designer of Hearthstone, took to the Reddits and decided to come and start talking about a lot of things. This is something they've been doing a lot lately, especially the Hearthstone team, Team 5, talking about complexity, depth, and design space. And there will be a link in the show notes for the entirety of it. He kind of goes into details about how they do a lot of design, how they do their design spaces, which he defines as, sometimes we talk about design space. Here's a good way to think of it. Imagine all vanilla, no text minions, like literally every possible one we could make, everything from Wisp to Faceless Behemoth, even accounting for balance variation, i.e. 5 mana 6/6, good, 5 mana 4/4, bad. There is a limited number of minions on that list. Once we've made every combination of them, that's it. We couldn't make any more without reprinting old ones. And that is the complete list of design space for vanilla minions. So basically you have a 0/0/1 to a 10/10/10 vanilla monster, no text. That's your design space for that. And variations go in between those from there. Each power that goes into each power has like a point cost that they use. So varying from, you know, a taunt being sometimes a 0 point versus, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just thought this was interesting, and they've been doing a lot of this lately where it's not really news. They don't really do anything about it, but it's kind of getting in there and just talking to the community, which is something that Team 5 has been woefully bad at.
Yeah.
Considering how good the WoW and especially the Overwatch teams are.
Mm-hmm.
Overwatch kills it on community-driven content.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great.
But, you know, Hearthstone just doesn't. It's not like they're a team of, like, three people. They have community managers. They have people like Ben Brode. It just, for some reason, up until recently, there's not been any kind of communication.
Yeah, I mean, for Hearthstone, it's really hard because it's a card game. So the only thing we really get into is talking about upcoming sets and stuff. So, you know, I kind of see the fact that there isn't really a lot of conversation happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much at this point, anything from Team 5 is better than nothing. So even if it's just them talking about, and people like me nerd out about that. Like they don't really, a lot of people don't really care. Like if you look in the Reddit threads, there's a lot of it that is just straight up Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Troll hating, you know.
Oh yeah,
this is great, but where's our news and blah 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 blah. And the Hearthstone team got pretty good on moderating those, but yeah, there's only so much you can do.
And you're gonna have those regardless of what you're doing, so it's just a matter of getting used to them and not feeding the troll, basically.
Yeah. And Ben didn't like. He only answered a couple of questions. One of which was, great post, Ben, out of curiosity, how do you view linear or parasitic cards like Jade? They tend to open some amount of design space, but at the trade-off of interacting with fewer existing cards, have you been happy with them so far? His response to that is, I tend to like some parasitic designs, but I don't think we should do them exclusively. C'Thun was also a fun parasitic design. Parasitic design, for those who don't know that kind of, in this terminology, basically the cards don't exist without feeding off of other cards. Mm-hmm. So, for example, C'Thun is a 10-cost basic 6/6 monster that says battle cry when it comes into play, deal damage equal to its attack to random enemies. So 10, as I was saying with the vanilla cards, that's 4 less than 10. That's a horrible card on its own, but it has an entire line of cards along with it that boost that number up. thusly, it's considered that's really a pseudo-parasitic design. In Main Streets of Gadgetzan, their newest expansion, they didn't really... There's jade golems that simply do not exist on the board without other cards. So that's kind of what they're talking about with that. So apparently Brode likes those, which is nice, because I do too. So, yeah. I recommend going through the entire Reddit thread, especially looking up his responses to things. He did, like I said, he did real good job at managing expectations on this, but still people were being stupid about this. Whoop. You made it yourself.
Yeah, people get stupid with a lot of things, so it's really hard to tell.
Especially on Reddit.
Yeah, well, Reddit has always been annoying for things sometimes.
Yeah, it's definitely the Wild West still out there, and it's up to good moderators to be able to get that. And you miss that sometimes, especially in a fan-driven thing like any Blizzard game is, and whenever a blue person starts talking.
Oh, yeah.
So what else we got?
As some of you may be aware, what is it, patch 1.75, 7.1.5 or 7.2 just came out in WoW. I forget which one it is right now. But that patch brought out Nighthold, which is the next raid tier in World of Warcraft. So obviously, like, getting world first has always been a major thing for these major guilds. Method and Serenity are the major ones people know of. It's incredibly serious. Like, these guys go for hours on end trying to get this world first. And one member of Method actually thought it would be funny, cool. I don't know what his thought process was, but he thought it'd be funny to try and sabotage another guild. So basically what happened is a member of Method, I'm going to try to refrain from using names because it doesn't really make a difference. They tried preventing Serenity, the other major guild that they were rivaling, from being able to complete Nighthold on Mythic.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, so the plan itself was actually kind of brilliant in its simplicity.
Oh?
Him and another friend invited a main raider from Serenity into a group. They entered the raid, then they actually took that group into Serenity's raid ID.
Oh, no!
And camped in it. So basically what they did is when Serenity finally entered, they got kicked because their ID was already being used. Oh. They simply could not advance. And yeah, I guess what the Serenity guy thought is that he was getting flasks or something from these other guys, you know, which would be in the spirit of competition, you know, like working with the other guys to try and help them out a little bit. But yeah, so apparently the guy went on to claim after he was teleported out of the instance, who was staying in the instance to try and keep the ID by the admins. He went on to claim that he was seeking vengeance against a fan base of Serenity for an attack on Method's server. And he said the downtime Serenity had was equal to the time lost by Method. He basically evened out the race where he was thinking.
And nobody else in this world believes that.
Yeah. Yeah, not even Method. Not even Method. One of the founders and co-owners, Sko, removed him from the guild until he knew more. So, he's gone.
Seriously?
And from what Method is saying, from what they're saying, it's going to be entirely transparent, the entire investigation to see how deep this idea went. If it was just a random one-person idea, or if it was deeper than that, to try and get, Method leaders into... sabotage, basically.
Oh, man. Yeah, and like for those who don't know, there's a very interesting documentary, I believe it's on Netflix now, called The Race to World First, that kind of gets into the mentality of these super, like, beyond hardcore raiders. It's really fascinating to watch that.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting to see how deep these guys go into it. And I would love to do it.
If you're streaming that, you kind of owe it to yourself to watch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I wanted to be a hardcore raider. I tried. it's harder than it sounds.
It really is. Like,
you have to dedicate 90% of your time to building your character for that.
Yep. And it's, at that point, you're literally working. Like, these people are getting paid to do these things. Mm. So,
oh, yeah.
don't just assume that this is a bunch of neckbeards staying in their mom's basement for you South Park people. No, these are people that actually do legitimately get paid from companies to do this because it's publicity. So, I mean,
good people. Money.
Oh, yeah. Like, for game players, like, there may some of these people, especially, like, Method, who's been in this game for a while, their players, their core makes a ton of money.
I mean, yeah, if you've played WoW at all in the last decade, you've heard the name Method all over the place.
Yeah.
Because they're usually one or two.
For a while, and Paragon just, like, we're out because this is a lot of work, you guys.
Yeah, it really is.
Our core people are, you know, being grown-ups now.
Shit, I want to play PM WoW.
Like, so, yeah, it was like, yeah, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, shit, I would play WoW for money. God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Anybody out there, just start throwing me money. I'll start playing WoW again.
That's basically mine, too. Why do you think I actually got Legion? what else do we got here? Something I'm excited about. This is a really exciting update that just happened with this.
Yeah, so I don't know much about the update, but Overwatch just got a big update on Tuesday. And it's basically Roadhog 2.0 and all, like, a bunch of, like, quality of life fixes.
Yeah, so it's the update that Raul and I talked about 2 weeks ago. Mm. Or it might have been you and I.
It was all three of us, I think.
Oh, but yeah.
It was mostly you and Raul, because I have no idea about Overwatch. I just saw this and thought it was funny.
It is funny. This video is hilarious.
Yeah, there's with the new update, apparently all D.Va players are getting flung out of their mech suits into the abyss on Eco Point Antarctica. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, like, yeah. Also, don't play D.Va on Eco Point Antarctica. That's a bad
Yeah, just don't. Yeah, when she...
bad map for D.Va. Just don't.
Yeah. When she bails out of her mech in this mode, she suddenly falls off the map and into some weird geometry zone.
Yeah, right? It's pretty great to watch.
It's really funny. they did fix it very quickly afterwards.
But it's great watching the videos of this. Like, and
oh yeah,
well, I happened to be watching a live stream about this because I couldn't do anything with the patch went live for the Year of the Rooster. Mm-hmm. So I was just watching a D.Va player that I like to watch, and she's just playing, and she's like, "All right, I got this." Ultimate's charged up. People just kind of all three people were like lined up there because she was playing 3v3. She's like, "Oh, this is too great not to use this. Nerf this. Wait, what?" What's happening? Where am I going? What's happening? And she just keeps flying and flying and flying, and she's just screaming obscenities at the camera.
I don't know. It's really funny that a lot of these Overwatch glitches have the characters flying into orbit.
Yeah, that kind of tells you where the weak point in the code is that overhead barrier. Like,
yeah.
There's so many places that they could go through. Nope, straight through the overhead barrier creates a lot of issues in a three-dimensional game.
Because one of the map with the cars a few weeks back, like, those cars were shooting people in the orbit.
Yep. Yeah, if you were standing on the car when, like, a certain series of events happened, like, if two people were in a certain area, you just got launched into orbit, and only one person could get back, and that was Reinhardt. Though I did like watching a Roadhog getting pulled into orbit, shooting people with his hook, and then throwing people up with him.
Sounds exciting. I don't think I've seen that video, but I'll have to look into that later.
Yeah, that one, I wish I could find it. It's probably somewhere on my YouTube history. Well, I guarantee it's somewhere on my YouTube history, but a lot of Dragon Ball Z abridged, so it's way down there.
But where? Yeah, but where in the history? We don't have a clue. Yeah,
it's back there. I guarantee you that, but I don't know where. If I happen to find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, that's a great one, because it's also, dude, just he's live streaming. He goes, "This has happened to me twice now. I want to see if this will work." Just shoots it, lands his hook on somebody as he's getting launched into air. Like, split second, grab the person. He got the kill for that one. See, because sometimes when this happens, you're just stuck there. Like, you don't always die in these. So you're just kind of up there. You don't do anything. So, but apparently if you can bring somebody with you, that kills them, like you're shoving them off of the hole in Ilios.
Because of course, why not?
Yeah, because that's how gravity works.
If you're being shoved in the orbit, then you're screwed. But if you shove somebody else in the orbit, obviously at the kill shot.
Yeah. He's just like, he's screaming, "I can't believe this worked." I'm like, oh. Yeah, me either. Neither did any of the thousands of people watching you right now.
Literally no one expected this to work.
Apparently, for Dark Redeemer in the Diamond chat, sorry about not reading the chat. I've been bouncing around doing a whole bunch of things. PAX South, apparently, it was a blast. He got access to the Switch as well, so we're going to hear from him as well sometime this week. And we'll put his email or his phone call into the show for next week.
Oh, awesome.
So I just really wanted to quickly touch on the – we're going to go ahead and go into the deck list segment. Wanted it to be a show. Now it's a segment. More and more people – I'm actually getting quite a bit of response from this about people trying to figure out what some of the terminologies mean. So they'll see things like TCG versus CCG and what exactly constitutes a party game. And also, are these games worth playing online? What does this mean by online booster packs? And that kind of thing. So I just kind of want to go over those really quick. For the most part, TCG, which is trading card game, and CCG, which is collectible card game, can be used interchangeably. However, there are some differences between the two of them. Typically, when you have a TCG, that is more along the lines of what you would consider Magic the Gathering and that kind of thing, where it is a multi-year, multi-tier kind of game where it is obviously meant to be traded and not necessarily just meant to be purchased. CCG, collectible card game, are games more designed for you to collect. So, for example, Legendary, which is a deck-building game, is a collectible card game because everybody gets the same cards in the packs. However, there's lots of packs, so you have to collect them all. Hearthstone is a good CCG, even though you can't get, not everybody gets the same cards. However, but since it is not, nothing is tradable, you don't really have a choice. It's just collectible. So on those, just think of, I mean, more deck building games and that kind of thing. Munchkin's a great CCG, a collectible card game, because you don't trade anything. You're never going to get a rare Duck of Doom out of a box where nobody else is going to get a Duck of Doom. And speaking of Munchkin, I got asked, what is a party? Sorry.
No, you're good.
A party game is exactly what you would think it of. It's a group of you and your friends going around. Typically, it's a more funny game. You would have games like The Contender and Cards Against Humanity and Munchkin are what considered party games. Typically, you're not going to play a party game with anybody under the amount of three people. Typically, four or more is the design point for party games. You're hardly ever going to play a party game with two people, and if you do, you kind of have to hack the rules a little bit, like how Rachel and I hacked Munchkin one day when we were trying to figure out how to play the new set.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's its own genre. It's not necessary. It's outside of the realm of TCGs and CCGs. You're rarely going to find a competitive scene for a party game. You are going to find competitive scenes for the TCG CCG groups, but rarely are you going to find a competitive environment for party games. That being said, I've seen a bunch of Munchkin tournaments, and those are pretty fun to watch. Every year at PAX Prime, there's a massive Exploding Kittens tournament, like 200 plus people doing the Exploding Kittens, and it's all, you know, you trying to. By the way, seriously, guys, go watch our video on Exploding Kittens up on the YouTube, so on youtube.com/geekioshow. It's a great game.
Really is.
And with with more games like Yu-Gi-Oh coming out online and Pokemon TCGO coming out online, I got a question from a viewer who only wanted to be called M, asking, what is up with all of the online card games? Should I invest in them? Do you get to transfer the cards that you buy in real life over to the card game? Pokemon does a good job with this one. The other ones, not so much. So we will deal with the good in Pokemon and the bad with Magic the Gathering Online. Pokemon, each physical pack you buy comes with a card. This has already been used, so I don't care that it's online. It comes with a card that gives you a code to play that if it's a deck, you get that exact deck online. And if it's a booster pack, it gets you a booster pack that you can play online. It's not exactly the same cards, but from what I've noticed, it seems to be along the same set. The time that I pulled a Charizard EX, I got a Charizard EX out of the same pack. That's the only time that's happened, but most of the time I get at least two of the same cards out of these packs that I put through the codes through online. So that's the game. That's a game that if you're playing in real life, you might as well play online as well, because don't be that person that sells your codes online. If you're going to do it, just give it away to people, because there's a really bad secondary market for packed codes for that.
Yeah.
Also, that's a generally good game, Pokemon TCG Online. Unfortunately, it's not for iPhone. It's for iPad. But if you have an Android phone, you can play that on your phone. They're working on an iPhone client, but they're trying to figure out a way to properly scale it. But yeah, that's just an excuse not to do it, I think. Because it's only certain phones on the, like, I think it's the Samsung non-exploding Galaxy Notes that can do it.
They have those?
Yeah, they exist.
Wow.
Now, that's the good. Yeah, I sing my praise for that. Now I'm going to go to the bad. Magic the Gathering Online. None of your cards from Magic that you play in real life will transfer over there. And however, also, the MSRP, the price that you buy Magic Online booster packs, are more than what you would pay for them in stores. The average that you're going to see in stores are $2.99. The prices on Magic the Gathering Online is $3.99 for booster packs. Now, they do a cool thing where in their tournaments, if you place a certain amount, they will give you, when you go to these tournaments, they will give you that deck that you want to play with, that you got there with, and you get to keep that deck. So, like, they'll do a Magic the Gathering Online World Championship, and instead of just having you have your deck a la a Hearthstone Championship, they actually give you the card. You send them your deck list. They give you the cards, and you get to keep them. But that is literally a 1% kind of thing, and only after you've spent several thousands of dollars on cards, because also the trading community on there is bonkers. It is ridiculously bad trading anything on that game. So should you play online? There are definite bonuses and benefits of playing online. You don't have to be in front of somebody. You don't have to be... you don't have to meet up with people. You don't have to schedule time for them. However, it lacks, especially in games like Hearthstone and Pokemon, where you only communicate via emojis and things like that, you don't have a real social interaction with it. So when you go to especially if you're a kid playing Pokemon online, and you go to a tournament, you build out your deck that you win tournament after tournament with on Pokemon Online, you go to a real tournament. You have no idea what goes on in the social environment. So you're completely
not prepared.
You are absolutely not prepared. Also, like buying booster packs in real life, it's a very satisfying thing opening up booster packs. Like, I will help people open boxes that I don't buy strictly because opening booster packs is just great.
It really is.
So it is a matter of, you know, if you don't have anybody in your area, check out your friendly a lot of comic book stores do gaming, and a lot of gaming stores do comic books. So check out check out your friendly neighborhood gaming or comic stores and see if they could recommend some place to play in real life. Because honestly, if I had to choose between the two, I would rather play in real life any day. Not just because of cracking packs, but because it's just genuinely a better experience. No matter what you have online, it's just genuinely a better experience when you're playing face-to-face with somebody. Before we head into the reviews, we are going to take another quick break from our sponsors. Stay tuned. All right, and we're back, and we are going to go ahead and roll right into the reviews.
It's time for reviews.
Yes, indeed it is. It is time for reviews. So as usual, I'm going to go ahead and take over the first here. I want to start off bad and go up from there. Is that all right? That's all right.
Always.
Yeah, start with the good, end with the bad. So first of all, as I mentioned earlier, Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links was released in the United States from Konami, originally a Japanese game by some third party over there that Konami bought and re-released here. Do not get this confused with Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Generation, which is actually a good game that plays by the rules. Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links is a... It's anime. It's the anime card game, basically. Which is, if anybody has played Yu-Gi-Oh! Knows it is significantly different than the anime. Three cards out on the field, 4,000 life points, ready, fight. That is what you get. Which is a bastardization of the game rules. You do get the original anime voice actors in both Japanese and English if you want them there, but that is literally the only thing that you have going for you. You have a semblance of a storyline that has Seto Kaiba creating another duel city and crapping all over the rules for everybody. Yay, Pharaoh shows up, and all of a sudden, Egyptians happen, and yada, 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 yada. I played this for about 3 hours, begrudgingly, because certainly it has to get better. Certainly it has to get better. Eventually, I'm going to unlock the actual rules, right? 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 Uninstall. It's not a good game. It's not a good game at all. It's slow-paced. It's weird. The rules do not interact like they should. The cards that are supposed to go together just simply do not. For some reason, Burst Stream of Destruction, which is if you have a Blue Eyes White Dragon on play and field, you destroy all of your opponent's cards. Yeah, it doesn't do that. It only destroys one. And it doesn't say that. It just says that. And they've been asked questions about it, and nothing has went on at all with them. No changes have been made to this. It is a ridiculous game. I had in here 2 out of 5, and I'm going to actually lower that down to a 1 out of 5 because I remember how badly I hated this. It's just not a good game.
Rejected.
It is. It is not a good game at all. The only upside of it is, the literal only upside of it is you can play it in portrait mode with one hand. So if you need a Yu-Gi-Oh! Poop game, there you go. There's your Yu-Gi-Oh! Poop game. Also, probably the name of the show.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Poop game.
Next game I'm talking about is the game that Rachel is currently playing right now over my shoulder, Final Fantasy 15. Just picked it up for the PS4 a couple days ago. Technically a 60-minute review on this one, since we're not far enough into the game to really call it anything else other than that, but we've been playing for pretty significantly more than 60 minutes. However, 60-minute review is more of a idea than an actual realism. So, yeah, you have real-time action fighting system. The fighting system in this one is real-time. You don't have any menus unless you choose to go into them. And
which you probably will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you do. You need to. Because if you don't use items, yeah, you're screwed. Because they do not play around with the difficulty in this. At all. You're level 7. They give you boosts in food because you have your super hot smoking hot chef, Ignis.
Ignis.
You are every person's wet dream ever. Not only are you gorgeous, you're British, you cook, you drive, and you put people in their place, and you play with a staff well. also, what the hell is his actual name? Because I don't remember his name. Pimento.
Pronto.
I just did a stream with him, and every time he says anything, I just scream at him to shut up, and I never actually call him by his real name because he's so annoying. And then you have Prince Edgelord, of course, and Big Brother puts people in their place, which is great. But
with his abs.
Yeah, with his abs and his tats. Yeah, Gladio. The S is silent. Sexy hot white man, as Rachel says. Tats and abs.
I mean, I can't argue with that. I can't really argue with that.
It's the other TNA, tats and abs. but yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's super linear right now. You have a semblance of choice in doing hunts and things like that. But you pretty much are stuck on a single road, literally. I don't know.
But after the first little bit, it does open up a lot.
Yeah, we're not even past chapter one yet, so.
Yeah, once you get to three or four, it opens up
a lot. Apparently we're on chapter two now. This is exactly what happened with Witch in the Hunter Knight.
God, where have you been, CJ? Jesus.
Yo, it's almost like I'm recording something.
God.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm personally only going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 because, like, the learning curve is a bit obscene with this, and it doesn't screw around. And admittedly, I'm playing it on normal right now. I'm not playing it on easy at all. Because that just seems pointless. But also, the battles either go from super easy to super difficult with nothing in between.
You just have to be really smart with your movement.
Yeah, exactly.
And stay off the roads at night.
Yeah, I got bombed. Oh.
Yeah, they say that throughout the game, and I thought it was a joke for a while, and then I just happened to be driving down the road, and suddenly this level 70 thing spawned in front of me. I'm like,
no, oh, jeez.
Yeah, I have to run.
Yeah, we were level 8, and 3 15 bombs dropped on us. Again, this is right outside of the first town, though. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, we had a really hellaciously good food buff. So between me spamming blizzard attacks, finally we're able to kill them.
Have you encountered the flan yet?
Yes. Oh my God, the flan! It's on the video. Like most of the video is getting to the flan and then fighting the flan.
Like, that's it. Yeah, no, it's
literally
the the King Flan like hunt is just, I wanted to kill myself because there's like the major massive flan, and then there's like four little guys running around. I'm just like, just stab me in the throat, just end
it. Yeah, eventually it just came down to the point where I was like, all right, I have this many spells left. I'm going to just hover over my square button, which is defend, and parry, and square and parry and square and parry.
Yeah, Flan have always been stupid in Final Fantasy games, but ugh.
When you're limited to magic, yeah, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, ugh, I hated it.
It does kind of feel like it's a much improved version of, but it still feels a lot like the Final Fantasy VIII draw system.
Yeah, it's literally almost identical.
Which I hated the Final Fantasy VIII draw system.
Yeah, it's almost identical.
Admittedly, it's though, different, but it is improved because you can get you can just gather them, or Noctis's weapons sometimes absorb them. But yeah, and also the fact that I know you only get those four people kind of irritates me. I mean,
technically you get a fifth, but that's spoilery territory, so I'll leave that alone.
I know who that is, because I do all the spoilers. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to ruin it for everybody else.
My initial reaction is a 3.5 out of 5. I really like it. I'm not regretting a red cent that I spent on it. I have a feeling it's going to get a lot better, but I just need a little bit more time on it.
I'm waiting for the DLC.
Yeah, oh yeah, I did. By the way, if you are on PlayStation, if you're a PlayStation Plus member, all of the DLC is severely discounted right now for it. Like, I got the season pass for $15. And like, nice. The DLC, the pre-order weaponry was 50 cents each, down from $2, I'm going to say. So yeah, go do that. You kind of start off with overpowered weapons, except against flaunts. yeah.
Story of my life.
Yeah, Rachel is now farming stuff. So another game I got a review copy of, it's no surprise that I am a huge fan of Nipponichi. I said this, I think I've done a game every week now that we've done this, of Nipponichi. This week is no different. This week around, they gave me a review copy of Phantom Brave for the PC, a PS2 original game released also on the Wii? Yeah, the Wii. And now on the PC. Now this is a game where you play a little girl and you have your best friend Ash, who is a ghost. You see dead people. Lots and lots of dead people. And you go and kill things. And
that's
it's all
happened to Pokemon Ash.
Yeah, basically. He died in the first episode and then became Marona's spirit animal.
Can't confirm. Also...
but this is a game that's very similar to the Disgaea set of games, where it's a strategy RPG where you have to manage your troop, send out people, and that certain people do more against other people, and also super Japanese, which is literally right up my alley. I've only gotten around to doing about an hour worth of gameplay on this because my Steam link is being stupid and not working all the time. So, like, I only have a certain amount of time that I can play this game, but oh my God, it's so much fun. The graphics, the music, and the voice actors have all been improved for the PC rendition, and All of the improvements for the Wii version got put in there, minus the weird motion controls. But hey, that's what the Wii was good at. Also, play this with a controller. I played it with. I was like, all right, because I'm a masochist. Apparently, I'm going to try mouse and keyboard, and just wanted to die. this is not a mouse and keyboard game. It doesn't flow at all. So don't do it. But my 60-minute review of Phantom Brave for the PC. Coming to nobody's surprise, is a 4 out of 5. I'm not going to give it a perfect score because it is still just a PS2 game. No matter how good it is, there's not a lot that I've gotten to so far that is unique to it. Apparently, there's some DLC in it that I had not done or anything like that, but I'm giving this a 4 out of 5. I'm going to continue to play. This is going to be one of those recurring games that I go through and eventually give a final review to once I finish the game. And speaking of final reviews, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, you guys. Beat this game, finally, this last week.
Yeah.
For the PS4. And, oh my god. they do not play around with your decisions. It doesn't seem like your decisions have a matter until you get to the end. And then, oh god, they matter. They give you feels like nobody's business. If you don't save Golem City or anything like that, you feel it, man. They make you feel bad about your decisions. Or good. There was one person that I was just like, all right, this person's not going to be important. Oh, God, they were important. Not storyline important, but, man, they make those side characters feel real in this game. The last boss does an interesting thing where it actively encourages you to use the things that you've learned through the game, Radical Concept, including your stealth and everything like that. This is not a boss where you just go up to him and start fighting because you will die. It doesn't matter if you're specced out. You will die over and over and over again. You are designed to lure this person into corners and trick his own weaponry against him. And I turned a mech against him, which was great.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun. This game is insanely fun, especially if you like stealth games. This game does a lot more in stealth than Human Revolution did. So, yeah, this is not really a run-and-gun kind of thing. This is one where you want to stay to the shadows or else you die a lot. And I played on normal mode on this, and I'm not doing anything with this because eventually I know I'm going to want to go back and play the new game plus with the insane mode that was unlocked. I'm going to go through and do that eventually because I heard there's some DLC coming eventually for this, and I'm excited for that. So my final review of Deus Ex, final review asterisk of Deus Ex Mankind Divided for PlayStation 4 is a 4 out of 5. Seriously, if you like stealth games, even have a passing interest on it, pick it up. It's a blast.
It's definitely on my list.
Yeah, it's definitely worth picking up. Delbert, do you have anything to review?
This week actually has been really sparing for me. I've been running with encoding issues on my Diablo 3 playthrough, so I was focusing on dealing with that instead of actually playing anything. If I may, I mentioned it to you in the pre-show. I just want to talk about it now. So. A friend of mine on Facebook invited me a couple weeks ago to moderate his Discord-only game conference. It's going to be free on Discord. It's the Power Up Digital Games Conference. It's the second year that they've done it. Last year they did it in July, and it was over the course of a week. This year is going to be a four-day event ranging from February 2nd to the 5th, and it's going to be 24 hours. So it starts at midnight on the 2nd and goes until 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the 5th. It's free to join. You can go ahead and the app for the Discord is discordapp.com/invite/PDGC. And it's basically a conference about focusing on the development process and giving budding developers more of a chance to shine and show their projects and what they can really do. It's basically going to have a bunch of guest speakers giving their opinions and advice and insight towards the newer developers and trying to build a new generation of indie developers. As I mentioned,
really? Was
that? Yeah, no. Last year, like I said, they had over 22 special guests over the week. Out of those, there are 15 confirmed returning, including Greg Zeschuk, one of the former founders of BioWare. So.
Boom.
You know, it's got a pretty big list, but there's also 19 newcomers coming from a variety of different smaller companies. and there's a bunch of different you know, panels happening over the course of the 2-4 days. Some of the two that are being the two that are currently announced are going to be restoring the classics Turok, System Shock, Fallout, and Rise of the Triad. It's basically talking about classic games are being remade and how the past and the present.
The remake of Turok is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, how it like combines together and they influence each other. And oh, yeah. Legends of RPG, where some of the game industry's most legendary figures talk about role-playing games, what the future holds, and gaming as a whole. So it sounds really exciting. Like I said, it's going to be free to access.
But this is not, they're not paying us for this. It's just something that Delbert's passionate about, and he told me about it, and like now I'm getting ready to have a fairly lengthy message to the person running this thing. So
yeah, so it's pretty exciting. Like I said, he's did it last year, and it looks like it's going to start growing from here on. So if you're curious, if you want to see the, you know, thought process behind a lot of these games and stuff, I would definitely recommend hitting them up and joining the Discord. There's going to be a lot of really cool talks. I have already seen the talk list, so it looks really exciting.
That is really cool.
So,
so it's 24 hours straight, or are they doing it in panels and patches and kind of doing just 24 hours?
It's going to be 24 hours, but there's going to be set time frames for everything. It's not going to be like straight 24 hours, but it's going to continue running. So the Discord's not going to close during like short periods of time.
Gotcha. All right. That's cool. All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and say the link one more time for me.
It is discordapp.com/invite/PDGC.
Very, very, very cool. And I'm going to check out some of them. We're going to see if we can get some rebroadcast stuff for this and do some awesome stuff with it. Because, yeah, indie developers are some of the best people around. People might remember our conversation where we had in studio Alex from Flavor Faction Studios doing doing his board game, and I'm currently talking to a couple of people that are making Children of the Zodiacs to get them on as well to do some interviews with them as well. I love doing anything with indie developers, and just anything to help that community is even better.
Yeah.
One of my favorite
episodes. And I will be on there as Viriatus, so you pop in from in the here, just say hi. Absolutely. Nice to know that I got as well someone listening in.
Dragos Kai. Also, one of my favorite things that I've ever done in the podcast world is I did a interview with the Young Horses guys who did Octodad. Mm-hmm. And that was just one of the most fun things that I have ever done in the entire 7 years of doing podcasts now, right? 7 years? 6 years. Giving my
close update. Enough.
All right, so let's go ahead and get on out of here then. It's been a heck of a show. You can reach us at geekioshow@gmail.com. Just make sure you put Gamer Geeks in the subject line. Facebook and Twitter are both /geekioshow. Feel free to message me on there on Facebook, and I will respond to you. If you on the Geek.io side, Geek Hotline, if you want to give us a call and leave us a voicemail, is 727-489-4335. That is 727-489-GEEK. You can support us and the entire Geek.io network over at patreon.com/geek.io. Make sure you check up on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/geek.io show, for our Table Tips video show, Tabletop Gamer Geeks video show, which will be coming back here shortly. Just some real-life conflicts have been bumping into us. I'm going to do a couple focuses on card games here in the near future, like TCG and CCGs, and check those out. Also, our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/geekioshow, where you'll see myself, Raul, doing some streams throughout the day. We're going to try and get more like active content on there, like cooking shows and things like that. Not joking with this, and I'm saying this because it's more of a Twitch thing than a Geek.io thing. My daughter, who is 7, is wanting to begin her own cooking show. So I can't think of a better place to do that than twitch.tv/geek.io show.
Truth.
Also returning next week, right? Next week, yes, next week. Not this Wednesday. Next Wednesday is the Mana Pool Season to our live play Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition podcast, where the heroes have restarted their adventure. Everything is weird, and they have to figure out what's going on with that. So check that out weekly, Wednesdays, over at geek-io.net. Anything else before we head on out of here?
Not really. I mean, just, you know, Facebook for me. Facebook.com/VeeraGaming and VeeraGaming on Twitter. And, you know, I'm still trying to grow, so anything, any help I can get from anyone out there would be really helpful.
Any help that you can give Delbert grow back in any way, and I mean any way, he's greatly accepting of it. Rachel, anything? No. All right, Rachel says no. Rachel's getting lost and wasting fuel. Because that's a weird thing.
And
Final Fantasy 15. All right, folks. We will see you right back here next week, where hopefully we will get some hands-on experience from the Switch from Raul, fresh from his probably post-PAX con, because he doesn't know how to manage himself at cons. We'll see you right back here next week, folks. Good game. Bye now.
Good night, guys.
This has been a Geek.io Media Network production. Copyright 2017.